Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Life has been awesome since I'm back from Quebec. I brought back $350 of cheeses. And wow, there's nothing in my fridge because I had pretty much emptied my fridge before I left. And now there's only the cheeses and the dry sausages. And the cheesemonger told me, with this quantity, you're going to want to eat the soft ones quicker because they will go bad before the hard ones. And so sometimes I'm taking a mix of all the cheeses, just a slice of each. Sometimes I'm attacking one in particular. I'm like, let's eat a quarter of the Rocchetta. And just before the show, I made a slice of Tom de Savoie with Bleu Ermite. I think I should go back to Quebec more often because there's no way for me to buy these cheeses here. The only way I can is to go to Quebec. And it feels so different because my body feels satisfied, you know. When I'm on only cheese diet, which is literally what I've been on for 4 days now, cheese only and dry sausage. Those are the only things I eat. And it feels so great. It feels like this is what the human body should feel like. Scott Adams has answered to my clip. He just retweeted it by saying, lol. Not an eloquent response of any kind. I don't expect much from Scott Adams, to be honest. I was making this clip about the importance of reproduction more for the audiences than for Scott himself. Of course, Scott is an old man who is half composted already. So it's not that I'm trying to convince him of anything, but I'm trying to damage control on his bad propaganda. Because if his bad propaganda makes it to young reproductive males, that's when it's trouble. But pushing this idea that it doesn't matter that you reproduce or not is absolutely ludicrous. And I've been discovering with this, well, first, of course, I'm thankful because he brought my clip, which was at 20K. He brought my clip to 100K. So I'm thankful for the views because I have to get all of the views I can. I'm at 8.5 million in the last 90 days of Twitter, but most of it is in the last 10 days. I need to bring this number to 15 million so I can get Elon's income stream. So I'm more than halfway through already. And just with one or two tweets of the same day, a couple of days ago, that made it. So it's looking good. If I can get one big tweet of a couple million views, I think it's going to rise to 15 million automatically. So I'm at 8.5 million out of 15 for reaching the guaranteed income, the universal basic income of Twitter. DK Shadow says, Jeff wants those Elon bucks. Of course I do. I mean, when you look at the Jan Malmstrongs and all these guys, they're showing $11,000 a month. Are you fucking kidding me? I've been doing voluntary Twitter work since 2010, 2011. And I've always been connecting my businesses so that Twitter was worth it. Twitter was always worth it because Twitter sells books. Twitter brings people to my videos. Twitter bring people to the Patreon, the Subscribestar. But holy shit, when I see these checks that people are making, 20K a month. I don't care about making 10K a month. If Elon could send me $200 a month, I'd be super happy because I've been doing volunteer Twitter work forever. Just having some sort of recognition, I'd be happy. Steven Robinson says, Jeff, I have seen posts saying that adding comments is the preferred method of the X algorithm over reply and like. Okay, well, sometime with a reply, let me tell you, you can get a lot of impression. So if I want to beef up my impression, perhaps I should interact more in the reply. But of course, you want to reply to the big guys. If you reply to a small account that will have 1,000 impression on their own tweet, your reply is just going to have a fraction of this. But if you succeed at qualifying high in the reply of someone who makes a million impressions, you're going to get a large share of it simply because people scroll down and they see yours. But yeah, personally, I've always been playing the Twitter quote retweet game. Original postings, that's always what I've been doing. And I think it's the main way you should use Twitter. But strategically, right now, if I want to get to 15 million the quickest possible, perhaps a couple of replies are in are due. New guy says, what numbers do they need for such payouts? Well, you know, I'm at 8.5 million and I will access this program when I'm at 15 million. And I've seen some of these guys publishing their numbers and they were at 100 million. So they are 8 times bigger than what I would be when I access the program. Shrink Mamel sends a super chat. Thank you so much for the support. He says, hey, Jeff, speaking of Quebec, I found out my grandmother's side spoke French. She didn't know that her father or my great-grandfather was Quebecois. I have been doing some ancestry research. I could trace her side of the family back to the 1300s in Lyon. Well, that is great. That is great to do this. And yes, you know, I must not be the first guy who gets tired of the Quebecois people. especially given that I'm a nationalist, I love the Quebecois people in theory. You know, but for me to be pushed out of Quebec, you need to be in a bad spot. You need to basically force me out of Quebec, and I was forced out of Quebec. But there is so much, and I recognize this in the genetics of the people I meet. One of the persons who's a farmer in the region where I live. He's fully English and all, you know, Canadian English. But I totally see the genes of my father in him. I mean, he sounds like my father. He looks like my father. And so there has been much mixity between the French and the English on the North American continent. One other thing I wanted to say about Scott Adams, not only is his response small, but his crowd. Holy shit, they are retarded. They are retarded. It's like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And I have great respect for my audience members because many of these negative comments that are just so stupid and they clearly contain zero critique that address my video, I just block them. But some of you guys have been questioning them very politely. You've been like, oh yeah, well, tell us, where is JF wrong? What makes you believe that he doesn't have an understanding of biology? And there was one hilarious one that was quoted by Fadam on the Discord. The guy starts with, I have a microbiology degree and... and then he goes on and he says, and this guy doesn't understand what he's talking about. And Fadam was pointing out there is not a single sentence that starts with, I have a microbiology degree, that ends well. This premise is the wrong one to begin with. And I was saying on Discord, you might as well start your sentence with, I'm a complete loser. And it doesn't work. You have a microbiology degree. The first thing you should learn in your degree, if that degree was of any quality, is that if you want to claim that someone else is wrong in a conversation, you have to quote them and you have to say, here's where JF is wrong. Don't start sentences with, I'm a complete loser. You might think you're raising your kids right because you have the right political, religious, and philosophical beliefs. But if you don't nurture them and spend enough time with them to fully understand your worldview, they will turn on you for the likes the first chance they get. So these are young girls mocking their father.
Hi, our dad joined a cult, and we're going to read you some of his Twitter likes. No, ladies, none of your jobs are that important. Society would probably be more efficient if we all left the workforce tomorrow.
This is amazing, because here's a dad who's been red pill and who has daughters who are in the age where his red pill knowledge accumulating is actually relevant to these girls. You know, here he is saying job is not so important. How old is this girl? Maybe 13? I don't know. Whatever she is, I mean, it's exactly the kind of age where she could take a different path. She could be told by her father that what matters is the numbers of babies you're going to have, and that's all that's going to matter. And if you get started young, you're going to have all of the rest of your life to do whatever else you want to do.
Outside of monetizing female beauty, men can pretty much do everything better than us.
Holy shit, this girl is getting the red pill right in her face by her father. I mean, where's the lie? Where's the lie? Outside of monetizing female beauty, men generally outcompete females at anything. Sounds true to me. I mean, females are good at getting good salaries for their looks in the corporate world, but I have never seen a big achiever female.
If you've slept with more than two men, you're officially a concubine. An ex-husband equals concubine. Young men, the world is full of flirtatious, loud, half-dressed women who would love to take your strength. Watch for them and avoid them like the plague. I don't think my dad realizes that I am a loud, flirtatious, half-dressed woman.
Look at her face. I mean, she takes pleasure in being the whore that her father doesn't want her to be. I think she will come to regret this. I think there will be a time in her life where this whole revolt against the father will kind of drift away. And she will realize that she has been missing some of the things that her father could have taught her. You can see that she's like, oh, how ironic is it? The whore that my father describes on his Facebook is exactly me. And she makes the kind of poker face, I don't give a shit. Look at me, how free I am. One day she may end up childless, and certainly she will have it in her mind that her father has tried to direct her elsewhere. Shrink Mamel sends a super chat. He says, they migrated to Wisconsin in the 1800s. However, they were marrying only other Quebecois until the 20th century when my great-grandfather married a German. See, that is fascinating, Shrink Mamel, because you have retraced the JF Yellow Temptation in another time, in another society. When I say, you know, when I say at this point we have to put pressure on the white female, it's very possible that your great-grandfather was the one in whose brain it totally clicked, like, all right, these Quebecois women are not satisfying. They are totally misguided. I'm going for a German woman and I'm converting to the English language. It's very possible that there are much parallels between your great-grandfather's life and my own. You know, this decision to migrate, to abandon the nation because it's too harsh. Life has become too harsh for him or for me.
Instead, find a gentle and modest woman who fears God and honors her father and marry her.
Okay, so there they are mocking God.
If you do this, you will do well.
Disgusting face. she has a couple of thousands of dollars on her teeth just to ensure that her teeth are well aligned so that she can get selected on the sexual market for the bilateral symmetry of her teeth, all paid for by the father. And there she is smiling with them.
To be fair, most of us chicks should get off of our high horse. Even a body count of 2 or 3 would be considered horrendous in history. We're just born in a different time. Why women voting?
These girls probably never had sex in their life. And there they are, already anticipating the pleasure of being a whore. I mean, it's really deep inside of them. They probably have had no contact with sex of any kind. And yet here they are, mocking their future selves as whores and clapping for it.
Ruined society. A 10-minute women video. Voting ruins everything. Men are better than women. Tweeted by a woman.
All right. Well, very interesting. There is a point in life, the teenage years, at which you will have less and less impact on your child's life. And it will be truer that you have less impact, especially if they have been raised away from you by other entities, the school, the daycare. And there is a point at which their hormonal revolution will trigger, which was the normal emotional detachment strategy that life had chosen in a time where these girls would, through their revolt against their father, they would go away and they would eventually be caught by a male and they would be immediately on the path to reproduction because they would feel, oh my God, you're so much better than my father. I want to be with you forever. And no condom, no birth pill. Within 24 hours, they were already inseminated, and that was perfect. I think that in modern society, with all the blockades to reproduction, we have extended this kind of little teenager revolution such that it plays a more harmful role than the only thing that it should play, which is it should be a signal of migration away from the family home. But nature had planned that this would happen exactly when you become reproductive and that you'd be on the hook for babies coming as soon as you would leave. Because these two girls, they go away from in tribal times, 100,000 years ago. They start revolting against their father. They go away. They realize that, oh my God, there's no food here. We need a male to bring us food. They eventually end up in the end of whichever male they can find that can bring them food. They end up in his home and they are already inseminated. In modern times, this little revolution can take the form of a Marxist cognitive development over a whole decade without them making any children. So it's a problem of nature. Nature had the right ingredients at the right timing, but the modern world messes with this timing. Robbed for his chain and watch in NYC. Let's see this video here. I love his macho shirt style. Leather seats. Very masculine. See, the thief has shown up with a medal that falsely presents him as a police officer.
Take it off! Hurry up! Take it off! Take the watch off!
Okay, okay,
I'll kill you! I'll kill you, motherfucker!
Okay, okay.
You're mine!
Okay.
Well. Impossible to do wealth display anymore. That is the state of New York. I wouldn't drive in New York anymore. FD says, perhaps their dad treats them bad. Who knows? I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, they look like very well-off girls that have been, if anything, overprotected by a religious dad. And I don't see here the revolution against a violent dad, which they would be much less willing to talk about it publicly. If they are revolted like this, they probably had it very good in life and they had a very good dad. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy or Country. The links are in the description below. And Justin has already sent a super chat on Entropy. He says, have you heard of Dennis Noble? What do you think of his criticism of neo-Darwinism? Can you explain in lay terms how an adult body re-emphasizes or alters the genetic code in the germ cells? Is there good evidence for this? Dennis Noble, I have heard the name, I think. Criticism of neo-Darwinism. But I don't think I've paid much attention. So here there's a Why Evolution is True article about him. Dennis Noble goes after Darwinian evolution again, scores his own goal. Dennis Noble is a British physiologist, highly regarded for his work. He is one of the pioneers of systems biology and developed the first viable mathematical model of the working heart in 1960. And then I criticize them as being either deeply misguided or flat wrong. Noble's claims are that, 1, mutations are not random. 2, acquired characteristics can be inherited. 3, the gene-centered view of evolution is wrong. 4, evolution is not gradual gene-by-gene process, but is macro-mutational. 5, scientists have not been able to create new species in the lab or greenhouse, and we haven't seen speciation occurring in nature. Well, those are statements that all have a truth to them. So I wouldn't say he's a quack to begin with. What's quackery here is to believe that some of these partial truths, and just reviewing, you know, I never read in detail what he said, but just from these 5 claims, as they are reported by Why Evolution is True, I would say the guy is right on some points. The error is the final jump to say, oh, therefore I'm challenging neo-Darwinism, or this totally changes our theory of evolution. Because here's where it's right. Mutations are not random. I would say I have exposed the mechanism through which we have a good understanding that even from the theoretical perspective, mutations must not be random because the genome is subject to trickster printer effects from the replicas and from all of the genes that cause mutations. So mutations are not random is a demonstrated fact. First, the rate of mutations is not even the same in the GC pairs as it is in the AT pairs in DNA. And secondly, there are subregions of the chromosomes where mutations are more frequent, some regions where they are less frequent. So mutations are not random. Perfectly true. But I make the point in my book that the criteria for Darwinian evolution is not absolute randomness. Absolute randomness doesn't even exist in the universe. Or else we wouldn't have laws of physics. Everything would be absolutely random, not predictable, not analyzable. My point is, for Darwinism to be true, you don't even need random. All you need, as Lendl Guntram says it, and yes, that's the term I use, random enough. Random enough that they are not tractable by an intelligent player that's trying to fix them. Random enough that they're not subject to the evolutionary contribution of another replicator, a trickster printer. That is, and random enough it actually leaves a lot of space for Darwinism to happen. My random enough is very hard to beat. Basically, you end up not being random enough when you are manipulated genetically by another life form. Period. That is my criteria. So he's right. Mutations are not random, but the Darwinism that we know, and that is Darwinism, isn't capricious on the word random, whereas he is. Point two, acquired characteristics can be inherited. That is true. It's true of some characteristics, but it seems to play such a small role that and this role is encompassed in a kind of cone of Darwinism. So the case that it's a small role comes from the fact that of all the epigenetic studies, intergenerational transmission of epigenetics, you'll end up with, in the current literature of all scientists who have ever worked on this question, we end up with a handful of things that can be changed through epigenetics. Maybe a couple of cognitive behaviors, stress in the mother transferring to stress in the child. I think there was a study on tail color. There was a little feature of the tail color of a mouse that could be transmitted through epigenetic inheritance. So basically a handful of one-to-one behaviors like this. Compare this to the tens of thousands of links between genotype and phenotype, and you realize whatever is this mechanism allowing, it's allowing a very small portion of your phenotype to be modified by non-genetic inheritance. And anyways, the second argument is made in my book. Non-epigenetic inheritance, or as I call it in my book, mimetic inheritance, or embedded replicators. Embedded replicators are subject to Darwin's law in the replicators that create them. So if you have a meme, your meme can't evolve against your genetic interest. To the contrary, your genes are constantly making sure that, okay, if I'm going to let memes exist, I'm going to make sure that I farm those memes to be as good for my reproduction as I can, which is why religions converge toward reproduction rather than homosexuality. So it's like, yeah, acquired characteristics can be inherited, but it doesn't matter that much. And even when they do, it really doesn't matter. Three, the gene-centered view of evolution is wrong. Well, that if you have worked with the wrong premises, the wrong premises of one and two, you might be misled there. But I have shown that Darwinism is much more tolerant to one and two than it is made out to be. Four, evolution is not a gradual gene-by-gene process, but is macro-mutational. Partly true. One of the events that has led to humanity is the reversal that happened with a chromosome of the apes that eventually fused in reverse with our chromosome 2. Here's an example of a macro mutation that probably mattered a lot. The chimpanzee, the first chimpanzee that had this, or chimpanzee-like creature that had this, must have been very different from the other ones that were around it. So there are events of macro mutation, and a lot of our evolution is events of sexual recombination, whole chromosomes, parts of chromosomes through crossover. Yes, the sexual life form has basically made a game of evolution that is so much more advanced than the one from the bacteria, that it's a speeded up and an accelerated version of evolution that sexual life forms go to. And partly because we don't evolve by single letter mutation only. We evolve with single letter mutation plus all sorts of events of recombination, repair that goes wrong, bad fixation, reversal of the chromosome. Yes, those are major evolutionary events. Does it change the basic tenets of Darwin? No. Because I've always said this. Darwin told a story in the way he was writing the theory of evolution. He said, gradual, small changes. That was just to be educational about it. There is nothing in the mathematics of the theory of evolution that impose gradual, small changes. Nothing. There is nothing in the axioms. There is nothing in the revolutionary phenotype. So work with these axioms, and you'll see that the change can be small, the change can be big. It's still natural selection. If your wing is a little bit faster than my wing, then you are naturally selected a little more. But if your wing is very, very much faster than my wing, then you're just naturally selected even quicker. Jim Crow says we don't even know if there was life in our solar system before Earth finally formed into a planet. Sure. So what? We don't need to know this to know a lot. And number five, scientists have not been able to create new species in the lab or greenhouse, and we haven't seen speciation occurring in nature. Well, that is just straight out false. And the guy who's writing this blog, Why Evolution is True, Jerry Coyne. Jerry Coyne is the specialist of speciation. And he has an excellent book called Speciation. And I would recommend, if you want to be convinced that that we have observed speciation, we did. and it's a gradual build-up of preferential breeding. So we've seen it in fish. We've seen it in many organisms. You have fish and they start going on a different tangent. Some of them become bigger, some of them become smaller, maybe. And eventually the bigger, they reproduce at 70% preference for the big ones and 30% preference for the small ones. People are saying that we are offline, the stream is down. Hopefully this should resolve with time. Jim Crow says it's good now. So it seems that we are back. So as I was explaining, you have a beginning of a subpopulation differentiation. Some of the fish are bigger and they breed a little bit more with the bigger fish, and some of the fish are smaller and they breed a little more with the smaller fish. And eventually, the size difference starts to not only be an arbitrary kind of loose preference, but actually you have less success. So eventually the big fish trying to reproduce with the small fish because of just physical or incompatibility between the gametes, it just becomes harder. And eventually you have a reinforcement where, well, not only do you prefer mating with the fish that resemble yourself, but on top of it, if you go to reproduce with the fish that are unlike you, you have less chance of succeeding. And eventually the gametes just lose their evolutionary interest in staying compatible at all, because the event of successful breeding between the two groups become so rare as to not be relevant evolutionarily, and the two subspecies become reproductively incompatible. We've seen this happen in nature. We've seen this happen in in kind of supervised, scientifically supervised settings. But I can't do anything if the sound doesn't work, guys. I would actually perhaps just try to refresh until the sound comes back. But on my side, I would have to continue the show to at least record it and be able to share it once I'm done recording it. So sorry if I'm muted. Try refreshing, but I have to continue filming the show anyways, and I'll upload it when it is completed. Well, some people still have the sound, some people don't have the sound. It's not something I can fix, unfortunately. It's been an Odyssey problem forever. Justified or not, man beats drug addict for keying his car. So some people are revolting against the drug addicts who are creating damage to their property.
He's just keying this shit, bro.
Let him go, cuz.
All right, well, that is what it is. Perhaps I can try resetting the stream. I've just reset the stream. Try refreshing now. I've reset the stream, but I kept my connection. I don't know if it's going to work. Anyways, let's get through the news. Look at this. This is why I'm interested in Elon Musk's revenue. $13,000 for a month. Holy shit. The month of July for Yan Malchung, $13,000 for Twitter work. This is what I'm interested in. Now, you have someone else here. Good Lord, Yan, I was all proud of my sad little $200 too. Lol. Well, $200 would be totally fine. I mean, any sort of reward for Twitter work would be awesome. People are saying, I see these videos and I don't feel a tiny ounce of pity. I look at the voting record. Did you vote Democrat? Did you march with BLM? Defund the police? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, well, let's see what she has to say.
I'm literally shaking right now. I was just getting groceries and I live in San Francisco and I never really feel fully safe. If you live in San Francisco, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And I just got groceries. I'm walking out of the store. And this guy is walking past me and says, move, you stupid bitch. And he spits in my face, spits all over my face. And then I say, excuse me, did you just spit in my face? And he says,
excuse me, did you just spit in my face? Well, it sounds like he did.
He says, move or I'll rape you. There's also people.
Oh my God, you get what you fucking deserve. You get what you deserve. You chose to be in San Francisco. You chose to make San Francisco the way it is. And you chose to be the welcoming place for basically all mentally ill criminals of the world, except right-wingers. Like, everyone is welcome in San Francisco, no matter your story of oppression, your story of bizarrery and queerhood. You make it into San Francisco. But the right-wingers or the rich billionaires are not welcome. Well, there you go. You got the sewers of the world. How does it feel?
People everywhere, and everyone's just walking by because they're like, I can't handle something else.
I mean, look at her. She's beautiful. She could marry a JF type of guy from the middle of the country. She could have. She could be well cared for. She doesn't need to be in San Francisco. She's just posing there.
In San Francisco, it's always something else. I don't even know why I'm posting this. If you live in San Francisco, do you feel this way?
If you live in San Francisco, the only phrase that should follow this beginning is get away, run.
All the time, I don't feel safe, ever. I literally never feel safe. It's better when it's daylight. But nighttime, no, not leaving my house. I'm literally shaking right now.
I'm literally shaking. And on the super chat of Justin, I answered concerning Denis Noble, but he also had a follow-up question, and he says, can you explain in lay terms how an adult body reemphasizes or alters the genetic code in the germ cells? Is there good evidence for this? It doesn't change the genetic code. At best, it can put annotations. So when I talk of epigenetics, those are annotating systems. And they are annotating systems that typically pass through a methylation processes. So basically imagine that all parts of your genome, you could attach a little methyl chemical ending. And it's a chemical note. And it's all over your genome, these little notes. But the code of the genome doesn't get lost. You still have the very same letters of DNA, but they are annotated with this chemical extra. And that little chemical extra, it can be a sign, come here and make a lot of this gene, or don't come here, don't make a lot of this gene. It can regulate gene expression, among other things. It can regulate anything, really. Anything in the physiology of the cell and how the cell will wrap or unwrap certain parts of DNA, express or not express certain parts of DNA. But these annotations... Here's the final Darwin pill on these annotations. Because the epigeneticist will come to you and say, therefore Darwin was wrong. It's like, no, these annotations are just other genes, the genes for annotating molecules. And these annotations are just the environment, therefore the phenotype of the genes. And the reason you have these annotations is that the genes making these annotations have been selected for. And Darwin is still, again, right. Like, you wouldn't have the genes for the annotation if the gene for the annotation wasn't helpful. So it's still Darwinian evolution. Trigmamel says, I ironically went full circle and dated a Quebecois exchange student at a college. She was one of the most leftist women I have ever met. She only went on 4 dates with me before she broke it off. Yeah, in general, I'm just not interested anymore at the Quebecois woman. I think she's totally lost. It's not like it's super better in the English world, but there is a form of extreme far leftism that's rampant in Quebec, and it's not as rampant even in English Canada. A Real Base Talk says, JF, did you read about the human skull recently discovered in China that is 300,000 years old? I believe I mentioned it quick on a show a couple of months ago or weeks ago, but I haven't looked in depth into it. Kyle Rittenhouse, Defense announces new nonprofit advocate to advocate for people targeted by cancel culture. We aim to help everyday Americans being victimized for exercising their constitutional rights, whether it's blatant censorship or the government being weaponized against people for simply speaking up against government policy. it's clear there's a coordinated assault on the First Amendment underway. These things, they suck. These things, because I will trust your nonprofit the day you go out and defend a Nick Fuentes or a Papa Jeff in his most edgy days. But I'm afraid that people like me who have taken the means to kind of call the bluff of society and say, I'm going to say all of the things you don't want me to say, all of the things that you've decided were taboos of the current world, just because I want to show it in your face, and I'm going to advocate for these views that you thought no one would advocate for just out of shame. People like me, people like Nick Fuentes, people like David Duke have a much more lasting cultural effect on liberty than these little associations who, paradoxically, will probably never want to have their name associated with anything close to anti-Semitism or stuff of that kind. So it's like, oh yeah, very nice. So who are you going to defend, First Amendment-wise? The Ashley Babbitts of this world? The MAGA screaming woman? The Charlie Kirks of this world? This is not even the forefront of the fight for the First Amendment right to speech. So it's like they always become irrelevant out of their unwillingness to call out the bluff of guilt of association, the fallacy of guilt of association that is constantly made in our world. Recently, I have covered the fact that Mr. Beast was suing the virtual dining concept brand, to whom he had given the right to use the name Mr. Beast Burger, because he finds that by the way, go away, says Ashley Babbitt gave her life for the cause. Show some respect, JF. Respect to Ashley Babbitt, and definitely she shouldn't have been killed. But I called her a screaming woman, and she was a screaming woman. There is video of her being a screaming woman, not even in the Capitol, but in the car on her way to the Capitol. Like, ah! Screeching, autism-ry kind of womanry. So I maintain my statement about her. Ashley Babbitt was her screaming woman. YouTube superstar Mr. Beast, after suing the burger brand that he had agreed to give his name to because apparently the burger were too disgusting and he doesn't want in anymore on the deal, he is now being sued for $100 million by the company behind his virtual burger restaurant chain. So, the virtual burger concept, I hadn't read in depth about it. It's fascinating. It's fascinating how bad it is. So, they have this whole conception, you know, and it's a saying in business, and you'll hear people on the Shark Tank often mention it. This idea that if you can be in just the licensing, just the intellectual licensing of a brand, you are in business. You have guaranteed income flow. You don't deal with any of the risks of the execution, because if you're going to start a brand and have to cook the burger and deliver the burger, that is all very risky from a business perspective. But if you can be selling your name and say, every time you make a burger, you're going to pay me 1 cent. That's what Kevin O'Leary loves. If you can pay me 1 cent or 10 cents on every item you sell, I have zero risk. All I see is a positive inflow of money, and there is no way that anything can happen bad to me. I have no corporate risks. I have no one suing me for anything. So it's a good position to be traditionally in business if you can have a passive income flow of very low executional risk. That is, with very little responsibility. And that is what Mr. Beast tried to do with the virtual burger restaurant. But that is radically in contradiction with the history of fast food. What is the history of fast food? The history of fast food is how the heck do you get 80 IQ fucking retards to somehow get together into a systematic enough processing that you end up with a Big Mac that's the same whether you're in Africa or whether you're in South Dakota. That is the difficulty of the fast food business and starting a virtual burger system. So the idea is we are just the recipes of the burger. We are not the restaurants. We don't have a brick and mortar place where we make this burger. You are merely ordering your Mr. Beast burger through the internet, and it will come to you made by your local restaurant. I.e., the Mr. Beast burger doesn't have standards. It doesn't have everything that made McDonald's a thing. Because McDonald's, okay, burgers exist everywhere. They existed before McDonald's, but what McDonald's succeeded at doing standardized nationally and internationally. Well, here we have a completely different direction for the Mr. Beast burger, and it went to shit. The Mr. Beast burger concept is that everyone can make a Mr. Beast burger with barely any physical meeting ever. I mean, I'm guessing that there are some of these restaurants making this virtual burger. They've never met Mr. Beast. They've never met a cook who knew how to do the Mr. Beast burger. They probably just received an email describing how to make the burger. And, you know, burgers can be described in terms of a recipe, but it's limited what you're going. The resemblance with the national standard will be extremely limited if you only have coaching by email. Rodita Sid says, how hard can it be to make a burger? Fry meat, put in bread, add some condiment, and you're 3/4 of the way there. Well, the 1/4 that's so important is all of the rest. It's the temperatures, it's the meltiness of the cheese, it's the way it's packaged, it's the little extras, the spicing. It is a subtle art because, let me tell you, I'm in a place of Canada where culinary tradition is not very high. And holy shit, are they bad at making burgers at certain places. Like, it's ridiculous. The bread isn't properly cooked. It's neither steamed nor toasted. It's like, okay, you're eating raw bread and they put pickles in there that don't fit there. You know, it's the art of equilibrium, making the proper burger. And it's not easy. So anyways, we find ourselves with, I would like to say to Mr. Beast, you have gone into the business of giving away your name. There must be a risk in your business. Like the whole saying of Kevin O'Leary that there's much less risk is true in the business of licensing and branding. But there has to be a risk. And precisely, the fact that you tried establishing success in a novel business model with your name on it must be part of the risks of your business. You decided to have a standardless burger production model that is centered around a burger that is virtual, a burger that there's not even a location where it's prepared. It's always coming to your home in a virtual setup using DoorDash and delivery drivers of all kind. Therefore, by signing the contract with this virtual burger concept, you have attached your name to a very risky enterprise. And that risky enterprise could have been the score of the century. You could have discovered, hey, everything that McDonald's has been doing for 40 years was worthless. They've lost their time, they've coached these 80 IQ's employees, and it served nothing because we can do it with emails and virtual burgers and not even have brick and mortar restaurant. You went into this business venture. You are not entitled to, when it fails, suddenly subtract from your contractual obligations. You have taken a risky bet. It sucks that it failed for you, but I could have told you that it would suck. I could have told you that it would not work because it's impossible that the entire fast food industry has been misguided into hyper-coaching and hyper-standardization for decades. Someone would have discovered it if that was useless. As it turns out, when you don't have standards, you have a bunch of incompetent cooks, and I'll show you. So that generates complaint. So someone receives a burger, it's raw in the middle, it's all disgusting, all wrapped and wet. Because it's been wrapped for so long, I'm guessing that the bread has become wet. There is a way in which a wrapped burger can be interesting. But in this case, it's a problem of poor cooking also. So, of course, that is what happens when you don't have national standard and you have not taken the means. You have went into a business model in which you were explicitly depriving yourself of control and feedback on the everyday operation of your burger making, because your burger is virtual. Your burger is made by any restaurant. And so there are things in his lawsuit, in the lawsuit, the initial lawsuit of Mr. Beast, there are things that, if true, could make him win. So I reject the concept that because the burger wasn't good, he's entitled to abandon the contract. I consider that. So Dino Legovic says it was a fake photo. It's possible. I mean, Quartz has reported this tweet from Jackin, who was saying Mr. Beast really thought drop shipping burgers was a good idea. I mean, it's reported as true. Perhaps it's false. I have no personal verification of that fact. So I reject the concept that because the burger sometimes has generated complaints, that Mr. Beast is entitled to break the contract. I think it was a fundamental risk that he was taking on his shoulder by investing his brand into a risky business model that hadn't been tested before. And it's the very risk of this business model that he has now paid for. The risk was the standard being low on some deliveries. But he also alleges that he's not been paid a dime and that the Mr. Beast burger was supposed to see here they have the same phenomenon, undercooked burger in a Mr. Beast box on Reddit. He says that he hasn't been paid at all. If that is true, and if the contract was forcing a payment, then that would be a victory for him on that point. There is another point. He says that he had to give explicit and written permission in advance for any use of his attributes. And he claims that the virtual dining concept has registered the Mr. Beast brand in 6 different countries without asking his permission first. Therefore, that would be a breach of the advance permission. Now, there's a question about is the use of the name in a different jurisdiction, will it be subject to a lawsuit that's happening in New York? They may very well argue that this is outside of the jurisdiction of New York and that they had the right in these other countries to register the Mr. Beast brand. They could also argue that in the terms of the contract, it said that Mr. Beast attributes, that are used in the contract are subject to pre-approval. But is it a Mr. Beast attribute to be able to register your corporation with the name Mr. Beast in France and in Australia? Does this count as one of the attributes, or is it more like a bureaucratic, more thing that doesn't involve any relationship with the public? We're talking about just the registration of the trademark and the registration of the corporation. Perhaps because there's no public-facing aspect to these documents, they might be able to argue that. But so basically, we find ourselves with Mr. Beast's claim are, hey, there's a couple of bad reviews, maybe 1,000, maybe a little more than 1,000. That seems like the risk of the business, risks of the business that are inherent to the business you tried to go in. And then there's these other claims. They didn't give me money, and they went and registered a couple of corporations without written approval. It's a little bit thin to withdraw yourself from contractual obligation. And we get the explanation from Virtual Dining Concept, their side of the explanation, and they have today responded in court. But 8 days ago, they had also published this public statement. They said that Mr. Beast was trying to bully them into taking more control of the brand and determining more what they would be doing, and that they felt bullied, and that it is the reason why ultimately Mr. Beast is going in court to dissociate from the contract. It's because he failed at bullying them into doing what they didn't want to do. So what they didn't want to do, apparently, is Mr. Beast wanted them to go, because he was very disappointed with the reviews on the internet that was negative. He wanted them to go for a brick-and-mortar restaurant model in which they would have more control. So basically, he wanted them to do exactly what this innovative brand wanted, to walk in the other direction. Their name is Virtual Dining Concept. Their whole concept is that they are recipes that are not made by a particular restaurant. They are licensed to restaurants. And Mr. Beast wanted them to go the other way and have a whole Mr. Beast physical location. They ended up accepting having one physical location in New Jersey. And the success there is limited. And Mr. Beast complains in his complaint that, oh, they weren't serious in establishing the physical business. But it's like, how serious do you want to be in a single fast food joint in New Jersey? He's complaining that 90% of their business is still made on the internet. It's like, what? Well, if you've opened up a single restaurant, it does seem like, yes, most of your business will still be on the internet. Like, what did you expect? That somehow in New Jersey was filled with millionaires who would pay, who would buy 300 burgers from you every day? No, it's not going to happen. So I find the lawsuit at certain moments in the lawsuit, I find the writing extremely emotional, extremely unjustified, in my view. I think it's a capricious lawsuit, and I think that the judge will see through it, and I think that the explanation of virtual dining is compatible with what I get from the case, which is, okay, Mr. Beast wanted them to not be virtual dining concepts anymore. He wanted them to be brick-and-mortar dining concept, but that's not what they are. That's not the entity with whom you have dealt to begin with. So the lesson for Mr. Beast is, do not endorse an easy business model where you are basically deceiving yourself that it's easy. You wanted to deceive yourself that it was easy because you were thinking, oh, I'm just giving my brand, so I don't have supervision to do. But if you don't do the supervision, if you don't do the due diligence, no one's going to do it downstream. So it always falls onto your shoulder at the top at the deal level to give yourself the means to review your employees' work, to be able to fully test and understand what are the risks and where could it go wrong. And you didn't give yourself those means. To the contrary, you have deceived yourself, and virtual dining concepts have deceived themselves into believing that this didn't need to be made, that somehow you can outsource quality control to every local restaurant in the US. But the problem is some local restaurants in the US are populated by drug addicts, low IQ people, people who don't give a shit, people who will literally piss in the food. And you're now trusting these people to make your burger. Because of course it's not McDonald's that's going to make your burgers. Of course it's not KFC. Because they've learned how to train their employees and they're not going to give it to you for free. So you end up with the crap of this world. You end up with the kind of restaurants that would have made it to kitchen hell. Kitchen nightmares. Those are the restaurants that are making your Mr. Beast burger. Bad decision making. We have a super chat. Dead Star says, have you heard anything about the special ballot issue in Ohio today? Currently, only a simple majority of votes are needed to pass constitutional amendments, which have gathered enough signatures to appear on the ballot. Today, they asked the voters if instead of a simple majority, it should be 60%. I wasn't aware. I will have to research this tonight. And if I have anything to say, I'll say it tomorrow. In general, a constitution, I find it safe that it's not lent to a simple majority. To me, a constitution should be able to resist, you know, the whims of the... I don't like mobs. I don't like the majority. I don't like the 50% plus one, because I know just how stupid 50% plus one people can be. So yeah, most, if you make the threshold higher, you just make changes tougher to make, and that's fine. Why can't we have any more of this? Yesterday, I woke up to this absolute beautiful dance music video the way I like them, the way they should always have been. I love the contribution of the guy, and he's going to come with a bass drop. Listen to this. Yes, that is when music was simple, enjoyable, there was no headache. Meanwhile, they've identified the woman claiming that a passenger was not real in the plane. She is a marketing executive, because a lot of people were like, I can't believe no one has identified this woman yet. Well, it turns out, what do we learn? She is a marketing executive working in Dallas. She has a $2 million home. We don't get to learn much more than this. As I point out on Twitter, we don't get any insight on whether she has diagnosed schizophrenia or undiagnosed schizophrenia. All we get is, okay, she has a $2 million home. I think she has become a very iconic symbol. With her righteous finger lifted, there's something almost not modern about this. Like, you don't see people even claim such levels of righteousness, even when they're right. But amazingly, there she is claiming that someone is someone is not real. And she's like super confident. It's a level of confidence that barely exists anymore in our world. And she has now been featured in a painting. It's a very beautiful painting. I love it.
They can either believe it or they cannot believe it.
Look at this. It is the Mona Lisa of our time, says the guy who tweeted this.
Believe it. I don't give two fucks, but I am telling you right now, that motherfucker back there is not real.
And you have the reindeer, you have various characters, E.T., lizard people, and you have Sasquatch. Oh my God, this is amazing. Such an amazing event of our time. I really love this girl. I don't know why she has something righteous about her. Even if she's righteous for something that she's deluded about, she has reached a level of righteousness about it that I'm like, respect, girl, respect. Shrigmamel says, hey, Jeff, I too find taxes to be extortionist. However, I have a special hate for income tax, as middle-class people such as myself seem to get squeezed the most with this tax system. Absolutely. Because you have the corporate world that is covered by expense reports. You have the poor who are covered by threshold. Of course, I don't know exactly how it works in the US, but in Canada, you don't pay taxes up to, like, if you get to 15,000, 17,000, you start paying taxes only at 17,000 approximately. And it depends on how many children you have and everything. But so, yes, it's a particularly dramatic hit, the income tax, because it hits at anyone who's productive and it rewards anyone who's not productive. So absolutely unjustified. Cultural events happening in Los Angeles. Let's have a look. Shrigmamel says, what kind of tax systems would you propose? Well, any tax system that is heavily limited, I don't really care about the format of it, you know? Like, if we could agree that all we need is about $200 to $500 per person per year to cover very basic stuff like the police, the judiciary, and an honest system of legal prosecution, if we could agree, and maybe the trash or whatever it is that we absolutely need, if we could agree that it's a small portion, I wouldn't care if it's small on the income or small on the property tax. The big problem is the amount. The big problem is the amount, not so much the form. Because we all libertarians agree that any amount of tax is theft. But also, you could have them reason, well, let's make that theft the smallest we can. And if you can make it that small, I wouldn't care if you take it on income or sales or property. I think that property makes sense if you want to give the right to vote only to people who have property. So that would be a way to kind of preserve a form of elitist voting where you don't get to vote unless you pay tax, and you don't get to pay tax unless you own a land. That might be a way to filter out bad votes. I don't care how you do it, but it needs to be done. Now, some people rightfully point to the fact that a property tax system makes it so that it's not really property. And I agree with this. So it's like, I wouldn't want this amount to be severe enough that it can eventually deprive you of your property. Or perhaps we can do on income or sales tax. it needs to be much smaller than it is. That's the important thing. SVX Drifter sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, it was Widow Smidjo on TikTok who freaked her out on the plane. It was the dancer guy, the guy that we saw dance. This was the guy on the plane? I didn't know. Maybe, I don't know. Nothing good ever happens at these places. What the fuck are these social convening places that we keep seeing in social media video? There's always a fight, always something wrong. Or some guy gets hit by the rolling car, you know. Kids almost never transmitted COVID in schools. Major new study finds. Again, we have these studies that are coming too little, too late. Anyone could have guessed this. The most healthy part of the population that tends to be very little affected by COVID, if at all, you would think that there must have been very little transmission. Well, we could have told you this from the beginning, but here we go. And that's the problem of trusting the science and listen to the data and let yourself be influenced by the data. Aren't you an empiricist, bro? Well, the devil is in the detail, because you're going to gather evidence faster on your moral goals. Your Pfizer, they want you to get the vaccine, so they're going to gather their evidence faster than the guy who just wants to be left alone. This guy is not super motivated at demonstrating with science that children aren't affected at all by COVID transmission. So you end up with an asymmetry of power just by invoking this trust the science meme. It's like, trust which science? How much time do I leave to the science before I consider that it should be trust? How much time do I leave to the opposing view to make a counterpoint? Because now, someone who was stating this 2 years ago would be called an anti-science person. And now today he says the same thing, and now it's within science. One has to acknowledge that science isn't as fast as people think it is. And it is only fast when there's some business to be made. And you're going to get fucked by businessmen if you trust science too fast. Yellow files for bankruptcy, blames the union for 30,000 American jobs lost. Yellow Corp. Is it the yellow shoe business? What is this yellow thing? Trucking history. Okay, it's a trucking company. Well, the unions demanded too much, and that's fine. Some companies must close. So that is it for tonight, boys. I'm going to cut the show. Thank you for being here, and sorry for the technical issues we've had during the show. Major Clinton donor arrested for raping dogs. Thank you.
Thank you.